Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to everybody who's taken the time out to listen to the next in the series of today's Social Positive Podcast. Today we're focusing on sustainability, innovation, and technology. I'm delighted to say that we were joined by Tony Kennedy today, Social Value Lead for the Net Company. And Net Company themselves have been fantastic and actually pioneering in many ways, that they've actually received the gold standard for the Social Value Quality Mark and the first ones in the UK to receive it, which is fantastic. So good afternoon, Tony. How are you?
Good afternoon, Rich. Yeah, very, very well, thanks. And thanks for having me on. Looking forward to the chat today.
Absolute pleasure, mate. Absolute pleasure. So I thought we'd have a little bit of a general discussion about the world of social value and sustainability in the IT. But one of the first things I thought would be useful for our listeners to be able to kind of get to grips with it really is, how have you as a Net Company face those challenges where you don't have physical presence in an area that you may be perhaps bidding for or delivery for, but the client's asking you for social value? How have you approached that? That's got to be a challenge, I'm sure.
Yeah, it is, Rich. And I think to some extent that there's a couple of strategies. Number one is to keep focused on the policy outcome, I suppose, and the issue that you're trying to solve. I think that's at the heart of it. And I think if you keep focused there, you normally end up on the right path. But we've got three offices now in the UK. We've got, and luckily they're spread, one in the north, which is in Leeds, one in London, and one in Birmingham. So we're quite lucky to have a reasonable spread of people around, you know, around the UK, but other organisations might not. So there's a couple of ways, I think, you know, you can look at it. Obviously, we've got technology that helps us do that. So when we look at having social impact in an area, we look at, you know, we've got time and volunteering we can spend to, you know, to do that, or we've got investments we can make, monetary investments we can make to support local organisations in those areas. I think the best way to have that impact, both for local communities, is to do that through both time and investment. So looking at the skills you've got to do that with, and, you know, for us, we've got a lot of technology skills, a lot of people in the organization that are you know, very skilled in technology and training of technology as well. So technology skills training. So, you know, with, you know, things like Teams and podcasts, you know, you can think about how you could deliver, for example, technical training online to people that need it in those local communities. So when we think about, for example, policy outcomes around closing skills gaps, you know, talking to organizations in those local areas who understand, you know, the place and what those skill gaps look like, understand, you know, who might need that kind of education the most, then supporting them in delivering that. So examples of that would be, we do technology training through our partner Tech Vets, and that's looking at service leavers and their families who are, you know, coming out of the armed forces and into employment, and trying to give them the skills that they need to do that. And we do that online. So that's, you know, we don't, you know, send people to those locations to do that. So that's absolutely one way. And then looking to extend that, you know, if it's a training course around, you know, Microsoft 365, for example, you know, people are looking to get back into work, or they're, you know, youth unemployed in certain areas, those skills are massively helpful. So we just had one example in Coventry where we're looking to have some impact locally there, and, you know, reaching out to the Positive Youth Foundation, you know, we found that actually, you know, Microsoft 365 training was something that, you know, they could really do, you know, within in that community. So focusing on your core skill set and thinking how you can deliver that, you know, remotely is obviously a good one. But then secondly, I'd kind of say working with partners, so establishing partners who have got reach into some of those local communities. They might be national organizations, or they might be organizations that you can find through, you know, different means to you know, to get in touch with, who, you know, do have boots on the ground and you can work with and talk to about how your organization can help them, potentially support them to have some of that impact. But it's really a thought process for me. You have to kind of get into it and, you know, get under the covers and really think through, you know, the issue that you're trying to solve, the what, and then looking through the how you can best, you know, what's the maximum impact you can have as an organization.
Yeah, is there a particular method that you've used, Tony, in terms of, you know, finding certain partners, charities, social enterprises, community organizations? Did you go through infrastructure bodies? Did you, you know, target a particular theme or characteristic of the type of people that you wanted to support?
So I think there's a lot of answers to that question. Two main ways, well, there's probably three. But first and foremost, some of the organizations that we're looking to support was really driven, you know, through the people in our organization. So colleagues working in Leeds, working in London, with a particular goal or affinity in mind, and TechFETS was one of those. So that came from our established, we have employee resource groups, and we've got a NetFETS resource group that's run by a great guy called Andy Lambert. And Andy, you know, is really looking to, you know, drive some of the impact that we could have for the veterans community. He's a veteran himself, and we've got a big community of veterans in the business. So I'd definitely look in the organization and see where that groundswell of I suppose activism in a way is, and people looking to have impact themselves. So that's definitely one way. And through other colleagues in Leeds, we established what's become more of a strategic partner. So we've got a head partnership that we do lots of work with, that has got broader reach than us in terms of, you know, they've got other significant partners, they've got a more significant footprint in terms of around the UK. So I think looking locally for some of those strategic partners that might have a bit more national reach is definitely a good one. It's pretty easy to Google some of this stuff and kind of to do the research yourself. So a little bit of desk-based research is obviously another way. Working with customers and our suppliers as well. So we have lots of conversations with both partners and customers about what they're doing. So you tend to kind of find out about great, you know, great partners you can work with that way. And I think finally, I suppose there are platforms, I think, coming online as well. So for I was at the procurement expo at the Birmingham NEC not so long ago, and I think there was a company called What Impact, who were looking at bringing together companies that were looking to have impact locally and some of those local social enterprises and charities that were working in those areas. So I think there will be more of those platforms to help people to locate those connections, I think, as time moves on.
I think the tech sector has got so much understanding and knowledge which isn't actually in, you know, the third sector at the moment. And even when you're touching upon, you know, Office 365, we use it as a business. Do we use it as a full potential? Absolutely don't. No, we don't. And I'm sure that's the case with many others. And sometimes skills exchange has far greater value than you know, painting a fence or doing some gardening. And actually, if you can build resilience, actually what you're doing is enabling them to do more great work using your skills, as opposed to that one-shot deal, which is nice, but I don't think that's probably where that kind of skills exchange and your innovation and learning and bridging that tech gap is going to lead people.
Like you say, those discrete pieces of kind of community volunteering are, don't get me wrong, they're all very good and they're all very supportive. I think for some of the third sector, when we kind of reach out to some of those organisations, it can be a little bit of a hindrance almost. Yeah. And they do actually want to work more in partnership with organizations, so that some of that, you know, whether it's volunteering activity or whether it's skills exchange, is done on a more partnership basis, something that's a little bit more consistent. And one of the areas that we're looking at for this year, next year, is doing some work locally with Leeds City Council, potentially to look at exactly that, how you know, the third sector, and there's you know, this was specifically around digital poverty and digital literacy, but how those, you know, third sector organizations in a council district can, you know, are able to deliver skills literacy at scale, and they're struggling, you know, they haven't got the skills in those organizations to be able to do that. So I think you're spot on, and I think, you know, we need to get that to that point where I suppose tech organisations are looking to discharge some of that social impact in a way that can really scale and kind of help that third sector solve some of these big problems. So I think, you know, tech companies more as a facilitator and enabler is definitely the way we should be heading.
Great example about the Leeds Council. I think that's on the money, and that's certainly the direction that people are taking. So if we think about, you know, tech world and obviously that company, how have you approached the whole green agenda? You know, we see a lot of greenwashing. We see a lot of challenges about, you know, trying to hit the 2050 targets, et cetera, et cetera. And I know you've done a lot of work recently and over the years around trying to be a little bit more environmentally conscious and paving the way. So what's your story there, Tony? What have you done?
It's a really interesting time, I think, for all companies on that side from an environmental perspective. You know, we're really starting to see kind of climate change. But for us, we've definitely looked at it as a really a two stage journey, I suppose. The first stage was really, you know, looking ourselves in the mirror and thinking about how we were going to achieve some of the targets that we set ourselves. So there's a big focus on carbon. Everybody knows that carbon emissions, net zero targets. That's something that's actually pioneered through the UK government in terms of some of their procurement work. And people who are listening to this podcast will know that all the procurements over 5 million companies need a carbon reduction plan and a net zero target. And I think that's been very, very positive, I think, for the UK as a whole. So looking ourselves in the mirror and determining how we were going to reach our net zero target was the first step and is a continuous, you know, activity to try and do that. Making sure that the targets that we had were underpinned by quantified initiatives, that's very difficult to do. But within your own organisation, understanding the value chain delivery and kind of the emissions impact is quite a difficult step. But there's some quite easy things you can do there. And there's some quite easy steps to try and reduce that, whether you're thinking about emissions or whether you're thinking about circularity in products. So an example would be one of the first things we did, we don't procure many products, but what we do use is laptops and IT equipment. And one of the first steps we took on, you know, circularity journey was to say, right, well, how do we, you know, extend the life of these products or make sure they're going to a good home, you know, after we've used them. So I partnered with the Good Things Foundation to donate those laptops through to you know, charity after. So there's ways you can look at it from your own organizational perspective, but then looking at the services you provide to your customers and how those services are provided is the second one, and that's huge. So, you know, we know as an IT service provider that we need to focus on our own footprint, but we can influence, you know, from our customer's perspective, the impact of their ICT estate on the environment as well, both in terms of the technology itself. So there's a huge and massive chrome problem in terms of the ICT sector as a whole and its impact on the environment. You know, emissions are going through the roof in terms of, you know, more people digitizing, more people connecting to the internet, you know, business and consumers. And, you know, that and new technologies, you know, machine learning, artificial intelligence, you know, the sector emissions are going up like a hockey stick. And therefore there's a big focus in our organization around how we can help customers reduce the impact of their ICT estate on the environment, temper the hockey stick, if you like, try and slow it down. But then there's also a focus when we work with businesses on their operations as well. So thinking how we can, you know, help organizations make their processes more efficient, you know, how we can look at things like route optimization if we're working in the travel sector, those sorts of elements of how we can use technology for, I suppose, you know, for good in that sense, will offset some of the rises in the ICT sector emissions alone. So you have to look at, you really, there's three things there: your own emissions, then, you know, reducing the impact of ICT in itself in terms of the deployment and digitization of businesses, but then looking for opportunities about how those deployments can help, you know, make businesses more efficient, and ultimately, you know, help them reach their net zero target. So there's a lot of work to do there, Rich, I think is the answer. And I think, you know, at the heart of it, educating people is a real key one. Bringing people on that journey, whether it's from, you know, an internal perspective in our own organization, or you know, working with customers and, you know, their businesses to support them. So it's a big challenge for us all.
I must admit, it's always been one of the things that I've always kind of struggled with a little bit, because I think everyone wants the green and completely understand that, and I think as responsible human beings, almost we should all want that. It's how we get there, and the push for more digitalization, even and the growth of more online, more intuitive learning, and even AI, with the amount of capacity that takes on servers, clouds, etc., that consumes more energy. So it's almost that balance between, is offsetting still the right thing? Is it more progressive in terms of mitigation? It's a difficult area, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I think absolutely. And I think on that, you know, when we look at digitizing services, so the digitizing of services in itself, we're looking to do that in the most sustainable way possible. So, you know, that could be, you know, when you move services, for example, to the cloud, because that's the big one, you know, cloud first, you know, doing so in a way that, you know, reduces the energy consumption, thinking about when you can turn it off, when does it need to be on, when do customers really need to access the services? You know, from a data perspective, you know, what are your data retention policies? Are you keeping data for longer than, you know, you need to? From a UCD, from a user perspective, are the journeys easy for the user? Have they got minimal touch points in terms of how customers find and operate that service? Because ultimately, that's all energy. So we have to really, you know, inspect those things and see how we can do it with planet in mind. And so therefore, we can reduce that. So, you know, sector emissions, I think when I last look, let's say they're about 4% of global emissions in the ICT sector. And we've got, you know, it going up to some studies saying kind of 14% by 2040. That's a big jump. So we need to kind of put a lid on that and flatten that out. But on the same side, it's then saying, well, how can that digitization help to reduce emissions elsewhere? And like I say, route optimization is a key one, but more energy efficient ways, telemedicine. So, you know, can we do more treatment of people at home instead of them taking five trips to the local surgery, or some of those smart technologies that making contributions, you know, in some of those operational areas. And I think we have to do both. You know, we have to look at both those areas and keep focused on them.
I like all of it, but one point that really stood out, which I think is almost a quick win for any business, you know, ICT or otherwise, is actually manage your data. Mm. You know, we all do it. We all have inboxes, and you know how many deleted emails are sitting there and never actually go away, or needless files, big files, etc. Cleanse. You know, just cleansing that reduces, you know, the need for the capacity further up the chain. And it's a small thing, but and nevertheless, they're an important thing.
Yeah. And switching things off when you don't need them, you know, ultimately, you know, it's an easy win, right? But, you know, whether it's a massive data center environment that you've got overnight with no one accessing it, you know, there's some of those things are much more technically complex than you might think. But, you know, the cloud-based systems, you know, allow that to, you know, scale up and scale down. So just make sure things are switched off when you don't need to. Make sure, you know, you're inspecting who you're, you know, your tech companies are that you're doing business with, whether you're purchasing equipment or whether you're purchasing, you know, data center space, you know, look at the credentials of those suppliers. So there's definitely like small little things that everybody can do to really drive us in the right direction there.
So are you seeing, I'll say a new approach, but the renewed approach, should we say, relating to social value? Are you seeing benefits to the business, both from the skills development, attracting talent, younger people wanting to be aligned or engaged with organisations with strong ethics and values? And has it also seen any sort of, you know, business wins or accolades that you can think of?
I think the really great thing for us, well, I'll answer it first in this way. I think the focus on social impact really fills a void between policy and results. So when I kind of call it the action void in my own head, where, you know, people tend to set policies and they tend to do a lot of reporting, but actually some of the action in the middle tends to stall. And I think with the focus, you know, having that focus on from the organization on what are we doing now to affect this? What are we doing now to shift the dial? How are we gonna, you know, what's the next step in the roadmap to try and, you know, turn the dial a bit more? So I think it really allows you to focus in on the things that make a difference, you know, over time. So that it kind of connects some of the sustainability objectives to the outcomes. I think it allows you to get to the outcomes a little bit better. You see more progress there. I think it brings the organization together. So, you know, certainly our journey, you know, we had lots of discrete great things going on, but when you bring that together, you know, around a social value strategy, so to speak, I think it helps the culture of the business. It brings people together more. You know, it allows you to bring that thinking together, whether you're focused on, you know, health and well-being, employment and volunteering, or the environment. You know, it allows you to focus on your own people, and therefore, you know, a lot of the cultural aspects of what it's about. And then, you know, once you've kind of got to that point, you could then look, you know, more into the customer or into, you know, your supplier network, more into the community. So it really brings that, you know, bit of structured thinking together and people together, you know, because this is about the organization itself. It's about the HR team, the finance team, you know, the leadership team, you know, everybody working in the business. Yeah, so I think, does that answer the question? I think it's helped us in lots of different dimensions, but I think focused thinking is a really good one.
Yeah, and we see that with so many different organizations. I think we've supported now in excess of 30 over the last couple of years. And I think there's always been a positive culture of innovation and new within tech, because you're a fast-paced business, you're a fast-paced organization. The sector is naturally. And I think that you adapt to change probably better than some because of that. And I think embracing that learning and seeking new ways of doing things, that innovation is so key. So it would go miss for me to kind of just get your very brief view on AI and social value. You know, as somebody from the sector, what's your thoughts? Is it a good thing, bad thing? Can it help? You know, and obviously does it, or can it unlock the power of social value in a far greater way than I can ever even think of?
Wasn't expecting that question, Rich, so I'll try and answer it in the best way I can.
I thought I'd throw that in there.
Yeah, that's a good one. I think there's a lot we still need to know about AI, and I think it's kind of going to unfold. And I think we need to get ahead of the game to a lot of respects. So I think having a focus on the implications of AI on our own organization and on communities is a really good focus area. And I think unpacking that would be a great thing to do. I think potentially from a government perspective, thinking about the next iteration of the, you know, the social value model, yeah, and the policy outcomes that they're looking to drive, that has to be a consideration, you know, for communities and people, you know, looking even at the education sector. You know, we already know that, you know, schools and universities are kind of struggling to keep up with delivering curriculums around tech, and that's just going to get worse. So some of the impacts, you know, on the education sector is something that we need to look at. You know, are we teaching our kids the right skills? You know, what does that next generation look like? So I think there's lots to come on AI. I think it's going to have lots of very, you know, it's a typical answer to the question, really, isn't it, that you hear from people. It is going to have a lot of benefit. It does worry me, to be honest, in terms of some of the social implications. And I think, like I said, we need to get ahead of that and kind of put in place some of the policies that we need to mitigate against them. So you can't just bury your head in the sand and kind of let it overtake you. I think we need to get into that a bit more and figure it out. I don't think anybody's figured it out yet.
That's certainly my experience as well. And I completely agree with everything you've said, Tony. It's great opportunities, but there is several, you know, ethical or moral implications in there as well from a social perspective. I think purely from a measurement and reporting, it's a no-brainer. You know, you can review and analyze lots of data very quickly, and it can come up with themes and trends and, you know, help with some of those kind of potentially unconscious bias decisions that sometimes you can fall into the trap when you measure social value from an economic perspective or purely from a sentiment perspective. But, you know, that's a very small use of obviously AI compared to the overall banner. But we've reached the end. We've reached the end very quickly, very, very precisely, but also very informative. And I think just actually having that initial insight, Tony, has been amazing, because I don't think many people can always grasp that the tech world can do so much from a social value perspective, away from the traditional kind of delivering hours or volunteering or donating. So thank you very much. I really appreciate your time. And
good to spend the time with you, Rich. Pleasure.
Always a pleasure, mate. And I have to say, the work you do and the work that NetCompany 2, I have to say, from a personal perspective, I've seen that journey. And that journey is something that, you know, you certainly should be proud of, because I am, from what I see. So thank you very much, Tony. Appreciate your time. Thank you, everyone who's taken time to listen. And we will certainly be inviting Tony back again to have further insights into the world of technology, ICT, and the world of social value. So thank you very much, and goodbye for now.